if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
All right, we're back in town for at least one more show for the rest of the semester. We'll see if we go any farther than that, but we are good to go. We are ready to roll. Baldwin and the Bergs, last show, potentially for the end of the semester. We'll see how the week goes out, but I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Goulbash.
Thank you for listening, joining in, as all semester has been. It's been a fun ride. It's been a good time putting on this show. We'll start, as we always do, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers with a nice win over the Cleveland Browns last Sunday. Always great to beat the Browns when you can. I think it was a game that most teams, or most people, knew it's going to be a game focused heavily on the run. And the Steelers did that, especially in the second half. And the Browns went away from it in the second half. And you really saw the tide of the game shift to the Steelers, more so with defense and running game, which late in the season wins you a bunch of games.
And again, that game had a lot of big implications, you know, especially for the Steelers in playoffs and Browns, you know, potentially still in that playoff run. But the Steelers took care of business. And, yeah, you saw much more of a focus on the run game and actually what seemed like a more solid approach on the ground. Even though the numbers don't really add up to a lot, they seemed like a lot more, you know, solid runs up the middle. You know, Benny Snell, Jalen Samuels even had a couple big ones. I don't know. It just seemed more dominant and they looked better running the ball than typical, but I guess that's also a key factor when you don't have Myles Garrett for the run defense for the Cleveland Browns. So a much better attack on the ground for the Steelers this game.
Yeah, and I agree. And thus begins the legend of Duck Hodges with a big win against the Browns. But yes, the run game was absolutely, it was super effective with Benny Snell. I mean, 16 carries for 63 yards. He's clearly, with Connor's absence, he has clearly stepped up at least a little bit and has at least started to become like that guy with after this game.
Yeah, he's shown a lot more. There's been a lot more. He's had a couple longer runs than Connor and Samuels so far. I mean, he had a long of 14 in this game versus the Browns. So it's been nice that he's been able to come in and step up. And, you know, still when Connor comes back, they'll definitely have, you know, the options of Snell, Samuels, and Connor. So hopefully there's no more injuries for James Conner.
Average of 4 yards carry for Benny Snell, and then being able to punch it into the goal line from about 2 yards out. Ducks numbers on the day were 14 of 21, not too bad, 212 yards passing, one touchdown. Did throw a pick, was sacked once. The interception was on a little bit of miscommunication down the sideline with Deontay Johnson, where the two just lost connection on the route. But the big story in the game was James Washington. Just phenomenal play from him. Duck targeting him deep four times, making all four catches for 111 yards and a touchdown in the end zone, right side of the end zone in the second quarter. Great game for James Washington.
Some amazing catches, too, because some of those weren't technically, I mean, they weren't thrown very well by Duck. He made adjustments, and he was able to get the catch.
The one in the end zone was thrown where it had to be. I think Duck's throws were incredible to Washington, actually. His throws along the sidelines to him were dropped right. They could not have been any better throws. The one in the end zone, yeah, it hung up a little bit.
But again, he also, I'm sorry to jump in, but he also got like hooked on that play by the cornerback.
It was a penalty, yeah.
It was a penalty, and he still was able to adjust and make that catch.
Yeah, but I think just the overall, those are the balls that Washington wins. Washington wins 50-50 balls down, you know, down in the middle of the field, the outsides, and especially in the end zone. So I think, obviously, this is good to see from Duck because we did not see Mason Rudolph throw the ball down the field. We didn't see him even push the ball down the field to see these shots that he's taken, which it really turned when the Browns jumped offside. Steelers had a free play. Go down deep to Washington on the left side of the field. Perfect way to get the offense going, and that instilled a little bit of confidence in the Steelers. So that was good to see. Big game for the big game for Washington. Big game for Duck. Tevin Jones caught a ball when he needed to. Being targeted once, big catch for him. Deion Kane made a catch for a first down. So some of your newer, younger receivers, so you wouldn't really expect to make an impact. doing a couple of the smaller things good. Benny Snell football, as we mentioned, was rock solid. Speaking of rocked, Baker Mayfield was rocked, sacked 5 times, threw an interception to Joe Hayden at the end of the game to seal the win for the Steelers. Baker was not very good. Turnover maker again. Nick Chubb was good on the ground. Only averaged 3.6 yards a carry, but 16 rushes, 58 yards. Kareem Hunt, 7 rushes, 46 yards. Overall, rushing game was pretty solid for Cleveland, but they really abandoned it in the second half when they got down. Jarvis Landry had 6 catches for 76 yards. Odell Beckham was shut down a little bit. 3 catches for 29 yards. Kareem Hunt had a receiving touchdown. It was the Browns' offense was, you know, okay. I don't know if Baker getting his hand jammed into the face mask of Bud Dupree before the
That might have had a factor
at the end of the half. I don't know if how much of a factor that really had.
He looked all right, but again, that still, you know, messes with your mind. It can definitely play a factor.
Garrett Gilbert, the backup, came in for 2 plays, but the Browns did an okay job on offense altogether. They really couldn't stop the deep ball to James Washington whatsoever. But yeah, other than that, Bud Dupree had another great performance. 1.5 sacks. T.J. Watt, your AFC Defensive Player of the Month, had a sack. This defense is just dominant.
Now, is this one of the better wins for the defense so far this year? Because you talk about, you know, maybe a Browns offense that had confidence coming in here, but they put up 21 points on a defense that, you know, was going strong for a few games. But then, you know, they come in here and, you know, Baker's looking like Baker again, turning over the ball. Not a lot on offense. And you talk about star-studded offense. They have some good playmakers on that offensive core. So Steelers, you know, able to limit those guys big, I think, in my mind.
Yeah, 20-13 being the final. Only 13 points for the Cleveland offense. Makes sense that you would think that they put up a little bit more points. But Steeler home game, defense has been great all year. It definitely makes sense. But the injuries for the Steelers started to get healthier, except, well, for 2 players. I don't think anybody's really surprised. But let's look at the injury report as of Thursday. Deontay Johnson was full participant. He had an illness on Wednesday that kept him limited participant in practice. He was back full to go. Mark Barron and Vance McDonald had the day off. They came back and were full participants. Ramon Foster got the day off on Thursday, so he did not practice. Juju Smith-Schuster did not practice with a knee injury. We'll get to that. And James Conner was limited with a shoulder injury. James Conner, we're going to change his name. We're going to make it James Conner, C-O-N-N-I-R. That's what we're going to call James Conner now, because he's going to probably end up on IR if he can't get healthy. James Conner can never stay healthy for this team. IR, maybe at the end of his name. But that's the injury report. Juju's not going to be back. James Conner's already ruled himself out, even though he was limited in practice on Thursday. Benny Snell and Jalen Samuels will be relied upon again in the backfield, along with maybe we see some Trey Edmonds and maybe Kareth White gets a catch and he's not just used on special teams, even though he's been great on special teams. You get James Washington and Deontay Johnson, who are steadily improving at wide receiver. They will be starting there. And maybe you see something from Deion Kane and Tevin Jones. Just make a catch whenever you're targeted, just like they did against Cleveland when they needed to.
Now, does it even matter that Juju and James Conner aren't even playing? Because look at the guys that have been able to step up. James Washington's finally, you know, getting into the mix of things, and you're seeing Benny Snell play better than Samuels. I mean, they're clicking right now. I mean, Duck Hodges was able to come in and actually, you know, make plays, unlike how Rudolph was. Obviously, Rudolph might be, you know, lacking confidence just because, you know, the hits he's received throughout the year. So having Conner and Juju not in the lineup is not a huge deal, and against, obviously, an Arizona team that's not very good. So,
yeah, let's look at Arizona. Arizona Cardinals is the next opponent for the Steelers. Steelers going to travel on the road. 4:25 matchup on Fox. Or that should be CBS. AFC team going on the road. That should be CBS.
Probably.
Cardinals coming in at 3-8-1. They're fourth in the NFC West. Kyler Murray's their quarterback. On the year, he's got 2,866 passing yards. A rating of 88.4, 14 touchdowns, 6 picks. He loves to run around, though. He's a mobile quarterback. I believe he leads their team in rushing.
I think he does.
He's got 446 rushing yards, four touchdowns on the season. He's averaging 37 yards a game. He's a dynamic threat, both passing and running. He's a poor man's Lamar Jackson, basically, with the Steelers having to go up against him in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think this game comes at the perfect time because you get, you know, a team that's not as good, but then a quarterback that is mobile, because you do face Jake Allen and then Lamar Jackson as well. So you've got a few mobile quarterbacks down the stretch here. So this is a perfect game, sort of. Maybe the Steelers can take care of things. You know, they get experience with these type of quarterbacks.
Yeah, that'll definitely be a big game against Buffalo, Josh Allen, and the Buffalo Bills coming into play.
The Buffalo Bills.
That's going to be next weekend. That's a prime time Sunday Night Football matchup. It's been flexed to Sunday night, and you know the Steelers on Sunday Night Football, so we'll see how that goes. But Arizona, they bring in a challenging threat. They always got the reliable Larry Fitzgerald on the outside, 61 catches for 649 yards this year. I wouldn't say it's a stereotypical Larry Fitzgerald season because he's usually great, dominant, but no. He's getting a lot older, so it makes sense as to why the numbers aren't as great as it once used to be.
And also you have a change in quarterback, so, you know, different mentality, different coaching style. So
right. On some other players on the offensive side, Christian Kirk is second on the team in receptions with 49. He's got 531 yards receiving, and he's tied for the lead on the team in touchdowns receiving-wise with three. David Johnson, their running back, also has three receiving touchdowns. They have Kenyon Drake, who's been playing pretty decently. Rushing-wise, Kenyon Drake and David Johnson are their running backs. They've been okay, but David Johnson, who used to be a top back in this league, has been marred by injuries and has just not been the same running back since a few years ago. Buda Baker, defensively, has been stout for them at the safety position. 110 total tackles. Jordan Hicks, middle linebacker, leads the team in tackles with 116. I don't even think the Steelers have a tackler with over 100 tackles.
And you also is Devin Bush in the hundreds, or what's he at?
I think he's around 80.
And you also look at Chandler Jones with 13 sacks.
Yes, Chandler Jones and Terrell Suggs. See, on the outside, rushing the passer.
T-Sizzle.
Now, the only thing is, the Cardinals are the worst defense when it comes up to yards per game. 426.3 per game. So, Steelers have a golden opportunity to rack up some points, to get confidence in their, you know, their offense, heading down the last final games of the season. Yeah, they have some playmakers back there for the Cardinals defense, but overall, they're not good.
Cardinals defensive ranks, total yards last, passing yards last, points second to last, third down second to last, rushing yards are 24th. They're not good.
Yeah, from what I see, I think
defense is not good.
They just don't have a lot of cornerback play. I mean, besides Pat Pito, I don't even think is really even been very relevant.
He's slowed down.
Yeah, he hasn't even been very relevant this season. He just probably got toasted, and that entire just secondary has been just like getting absolutely cooked this year.
Their most interceptions by the player comes out of the linebacker position, and Jordan Hicks.
I mean, they looks like the front seven you can say is there. They have it. Like Hicks, Jones, and a bunch of other like nice pieces to come along
Terrell
with
Suggs,
it.
Veteran.
Terrell
Suggs,
yeah,
veteran.
A bunch of decent players.
And
I
then,
think
and then
the line
the
needs
second,
to be better.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if your secondary is bad, people are just going to pass the ball over you, and then you can get, and then you can be last in total yards.
You know, if they can start off passing the ball with Duck and then find that balance in the running game, this could be a very, you know, strong game for the Steelers, hopefully, because obviously the defense is going to hold their own, as they typically do. It's time for this offense to really get going. Will this be maybe a time that they finally get to 30 points? You know,
That'll be something to look at, something to target. Steelers, as we've seen in the past, have struggled on the West Coast, no matter who they ended up playing. But they opened as 1.5-point favorites, now 2.5. I would, in terms of the betting odds, I would probably take the over. I think the Steelers are going to win, probably by a touchdown. Not exactly sure what the final score will be, because I think Arizona, they got absolutely embarrassed by the Rams at home last week. They got embarrassed. That game was not even close. 34-7, the Rams shut them out after the Rams have been just dominated at times this season. Cardinals have lost 5 in a row, though. I think they'll bounce back. But I don't think it's going to be enough. I don't think their firepower is going to be enough offensively to be able to drive consistently and put up consistent scoring threats on the Steeler defense.
It all depends on Kyler Murray. Just it relies on him heavily. It relies on his shoulder because he's obviously your playmaker, obviously your quarterback, but he seems to be the only playmaker. He leads your team in rushing. not only in passing but rushing. So it all comes down to him and how he plays. If he turns into a turnover machine, there's no chance.
But I don't think that's like. I mean, he has like what? I think he has one pick on the year. I don't think he's thrown a whole lot of interceptions. So he's able to
keep
six.
The, he 14 six? Touchdowns and six interceptions. He has six. Okay. Yeah, he's completed 63% of his passes.
Yeah, I mean, again, the team. This team kind of barely. They don't turn the ball over a whole lot. I mean, besides, again, like you said, the six turnovers. I mean, other than that, I mean, you know, he's normally able to stay pretty clean with the ball and able to make nice plays.
And you look at this team, the Cardinals are like 15 points from being a winless team. I mean, they've won the games they've won. They've beat the Giants by six, the Falcons by one, and then the Bengals by three, and then they tied. So they're a few points away from being a winless team.
They've also played the 49ers tough at home on Halloween night, 28-25. And then they went to San Francisco, lost by 10. They tied the Lions after being down by, I don't know, remember the exact number. They scored 18 in the fourth quarter. Yeah, in the fourth quarter to send it to overtime.
A lot of people thought after that game that this team was going to be for real, but obviously they just haven't been able to mount the wins.
They lost by three at Tampa Bay. So their losses, some of them have been blowouts, some of them have been close. It's just a rookie quarterback, rookie coach.
Your typical inconsistency.
It's just a bunch of rookies just trying to figure out how to do things.
You know, where you have a few veterans and then a lot of young players. It's your typical inconsistency of a rebuilding team, you know, and a tough division too.
Lots of cool games. Good games, I guess I should say, this week. Baltimore visits Buffalo. They're 5.5-point favorites. San Francisco goes on the road to New Orleans. New Orleans is favored by 2.5. Steelers obviously go to Arizona, also favored by 2.5. The New England Patriots host Kansas City. They get 3 points, and usually it's a pick 'em. If it's 3 points, usually just awarded to the home team. So that's going to be definitely an interesting game. And then the Sunday night football game is Seattle at the Rams. Seattle favored by 1 point. But Steelers will look to continue their winning ways, look to go to 8-5, win their third in a row. Behind the leadership of Duck Hodges, Steelers will be without Juju, will be without James Conner, IR. He's not on IR, but we'll see if he gets back from his injury, which some are believing it's an AC joint injury. We'll see where the Steelers go from here. Good chance to bounce back with another win against Arizona. And hopefully the offense just continues to stretch the ball down the field and play well and hopefully we see the one problem with Duck that we have not seen yet is if the Steelers are down by, you know, a substantial mark in the second half. Now we saw the Steelers down by 10 in the first half. What if they're down by 10 in the second half? Will Duck be able to take them out of that hole?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, we're waiting to see. But, you know, I mean, he shows that he can have the resiliency and to bounce back by a deficit. But obviously it depends on, you know, the time in the game. So we're going to have to wait and see until that actually happens. Now, I don't think that should happen against the Cardinals, but if Kyler Murray comes out, you know, slinging the ball, I mean, it could potentially happen.
All right, let's move on to college football and some college basketball. Regular season play for college football is officially over. This weekend begins conference championship games. College football playoff rankings will be released after that, with the college football playoff taking place around the New Year's 6th, around New Year's Day. So, Nate, you're our college football expert. Tell us about the wrap-ups of the season for Pitt, Penn State, and anything in between.
So, starting with Penn State, they obviously, you know, tough loss to Ohio State a few weeks back. They finished the season 10-2 with finishing off against Rutgers, which is such an easy.
It's a good team, right? Rutgers. Yeah. No,
great,
really.
Great quality football team. Great quality matchup.
I don't know if he might be one of the worst Power 5 teams.
Yeah, just, they get Greg Schiano back.
Just a state. But
I mean, come on. I mean, Rutgers they get beat up by everybody.
Just, yeah. Penn State handles them easily, 27-6.
Michigan always ends up blowing them out. Like, it's bad.
Yeah, so they were without Sean Clifford in that game, but he finished the year with 2,521 passing yards. And you talk about two strong, reliable targets for him. KJ Hamler, 858 receiving yards and 8 touchdowns. Pat Freiermuth, 7 touchdowns. A lot of good targets for this Penn State offense as they go into, you know, their bowl game. They finish maybe better than a lot of people expected in a quote-unquote rebuilding year for a team that, you know, loses Trace McSorley and Miles Sanders and other guys, you know, the past couple of years. Big losses, but they simply were able to bounce back and rely a lot on that defense. But their offense played much better this year than I think a lot of people thought. They relied on, you know, a couple different backs, but Journey Brown really stepped up throughout the year, 688 total yards, finishing with that on the ground and 10 touchdowns. So relying on him, he'll be a key factor, in postseason and postseason play, and then maybe next year. So this team, exceeded a lot of expectations for them. And, we're still competing to the end for their division against Ohio State, but couldn't get that win. But they'll go in potentially looking for an 11-2 year.
Yeah, I'd say this was a great year for them. I mean, the defense was obviously one of the best in the nation. I mean, this team, when it comes to Penn State, they didn't need to rebuild. They just reloaded with all this talent they got.
Yeah, it's what great programs do. They just reload with the talent.
Like the Bamas, the Clemsons, they don't
have a year off.
Yeah, they don't have a year off. They reload, and they're constantly in contention. That's what makes great franchises great, and Penn State is obviously one of those teams.
And you look at, some of the defensive talent. I mean, Mika Parsons will probably head to the draft. Yuter Gross-Matos has already declared.
He's ranked now as the number third DN.
Good chance that he sneaks into the back end of the first round of the draft.
Yeah, he's going to be a great prospect out of the draft for Penn State, continuing to produce great defensive players. So we'll see where he lands. But Penn State, heads in potentially looking for a New Year's Six Bowl this postseason. So that's a little wrap on them as they finish 10-2 on the regular season. Pitt finishes 7-5 and a big loss to Boston College in the final game, 26-19. Pitt, it just seems to continually be that Pitt cannot finish off a season. They were, 7-3, and then they lost their last two games that, blowout loss to Virginia Tech, and then a loss to Boston College, who they should have beat. I'm pretty sure they, had the edge on the line before the game. So, but A.J. Dillon is a big back. He's an NFL caliber running back. He's big. He was averaging, I believe, probably 5 yards per carry in that game. I mean, he was just
Did you hear what Narduzzi said about him, Dillon? He wondered why he wasn't even in Heisman contention. But, that was just Narduzzi being Narduzzi, I think. Just because, he's a great running back and all, but, Boston College is not a good football team. There was no reason to rank him in that sort of rank. But he is a quality running back.
And Boston College obviously had a lot to play for because they were looking to be bowl eligible. I mean, Pitt was bowl eligible halfway through the year, which was probably the earliest they've done that in a while. But then they just continue to not be able to finish off the regular season. Last year, or just their season in general, last year they were 7-4 and lost their last three games and finished a mere .500. In a year they won the Coastal Division. That just shouldn't happen. They lost a one-point game and a bowl game to Stanford. They lost to Miami, who was not very good last year. This year they lost to Miami, who was not very good. They lost to FIU.
And then Miami ended up being ahead of us in the Coastal.
Yeah, Pitt finishes fourth. I think they were predicted to finish fifth in the Coastal this year before the start. So they finished, I think, a spot above their expectations. But still, the way they were going, the way they started, and the way they defense, they wasted a very, very talented defense. Finished with 49 sacks, third in the nation, top 15 and yards per game. So they wasted a very good defense, a lot of talent. And a lot of these guys will return, except DeMar Hamlin, Kylan Johnson, Dane Jackson. So you're going to lose some back-end guys. But that front D-line, they'll all return.
Rashad Weaver will be back.
Rashad Weaver, Kayshon Camp.
John
Twyman.
If this defense was able to improve on the season they had, it would be such a great win for this for this organization in general.
Maybe Matt Mongoluzzo will walk on and play defensive back.
after his Turkey Bowl performance, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, after his tackling in the Turkey Bowl.
I'd say Nate's tackling was pretty good. I'd say he had a shot.
And now just wrapping things up, though, looking at Pat Narduzzi, he has 1 year left.
He can't develop anybody offensively.
I will say he finally is bringing a relatively good recruiting class if he can get everybody to stay and sign. I mean, they have guys that have been bumped up to 4 stars, so they have some pretty good recruits coming in this next class. But, I mean, you look at – he has not won a postseason game since joining the Panthers. They finished, his first 2 years 8-5 when they could easily finish 9-4, but they lost both their bowl games. And then they obviously couldn't win versus Clemson or Stanford last year, and now obviously he has the bowl game coming up. So – if he doesn't win this bowl game, he's going to have a tough year next year. And obviously, if he can't finish, maybe even with double-digit wins, I don't know if he'll be returning for 2021. So, he has his work cut out for him, and we'll see where he goes and how he does in postseason play. And then the last team to talk about, the West Virginia Mountaineers, finished a mere 5-7 record. They are not bowl eligible this year.
Nope.
They did win their final game in keeping TCU from becoming bowl eligible. They won 20-17. There's going to be a lot of, you know, mix-ups and stuff that goes on. And Morgantown, I mean, people that are going to transfer, you know, new guys coming in. We'll see what happens with the quarterback position there. So there's just a lot of, you know, turnaround and rebuild, a little bit of rebuild for this Mountaineers team. So not a lot of promise this year for them. They do come out with a big win to end the year to get to 5 wins, but that's just about it for West Virginia. Yeah, that's about it for local college talk. But let's look at the.
Hold on, I want to go back to Narduzzi. If my problem with maybe firing Narduzzi is Pitt's program, the ceiling is 7-9 wins. Like, that's just the ceiling. Like, this is just what Pitt is.
Yeah,
Pitt is not a team that's going to consistently dominate the Coastal. Dominate, you know, the ACC.
And even looking back at, like, Big East teams, teams that were good couldn't even get the double-digit wins.
Well, Pitt's, I think what Pitt is just a team that they're going to, you know, 7-8 wins, 9 should be the goal. But and then one year where it's really good and everything clicks, but then a couple more years where it doesn't and no one really, you know, understands why. But it's just because it's Pitt. And that's the program. That's just the program. That's just what Pitt is.
Yeah, it's just tough because – like I said, I think Narduzzi has one more year. But it's tough because he finally is getting around to the recruiting aspects. He's finally getting in some good recruits, especially even in the Whippeul. He's finally, you know, figuring it out.
The all Whippeul D-line.
You know, trying to go after Elliot Donald.
Dorian Ford.
Baldwin product.
Yeah, so he's trying to go after those local recruits, and he's getting a couple of them. But he's got to start clicking with these other guys. I mean, you see a lot of offensive linemen that are heading up to Notre Dame because Pitt just doesn't have what it takes to, you know, to recruit them.
Maybe he should offer to our all-pro corner from the Turkey Bowl, C.J. Robbins.
Who knows? Maybe we can get a lockdown corner, Damar Hamlin. Maybe he can be our replacement.
But, yeah, I just don't know how much better. I don't want to say how much better you can do with Narduzzi, but this is Pitt. Okay? This isn't, you know, a blue blood program. This isn't someone that, you know, top-notch coaches are going to want to go to. I think getting Narduzzi is the best coaching hire this program's had for a while. His offense, he's changed offensive coordinators like the change of seasons. There's constantly new offensive personnel and coaching. There's just been no sustained good coaching on the offensive side. Offensive coordinator changing almost every year.
Yeah, no real stability. I mean, you just look at the differences between, you know, in the state, between Pitt and Penn State. I mean, at least at head coaching. Narduzzi, I think, is just... He lets his emotions get to the best of him. James Franklin is more, you know, he's strict. He's more collected. He knows how to maintain his composure. You know, he knows how to play winning football. Narduzzi's biggest thing is he can't close out those big games. He can't. He couldn't close it out against Duke. He couldn't close it out against Syracuse. Yeah, they won, but, you know, they had struggles down to the end. Couldn't win against Virginia Tech, the biggest game of the year. And then obviously they couldn't even finish out the year at home. So I mean, he's just not been able to win big games. And I think there's a fine line, though. If he continues to do that, you know, mediocrity I don't think is, you know, where Pitt wants to be. I think they want to win. So I think there's a fine line that, you know, there is a ceiling that he's going to have to, you know, get to. But right now he's just not reaching it, so.
Yeah, but I just wanted to go back to that. Continue what you were saying.
So, let's look at the college football playoff rankings as that is going to come into, you know, big play coming into this weekend, championship weekend. Looking at the top six, Ohio State, followed by LSU, Clemson at 3, Georgia 4, and then, you know, the final two at 5 and 6, Utah and then Oklahoma. So, those six teams all competing still for, you know, the playoff. Ohio State taking on Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. You have LSU and Georgia. So, you know, I think that's obviously the biggest matchup. Now, what happens with that matchup if Georgia wins? Does LSU fall out or do they stay?
If Georgia wins, I think that the playoff, I think all four teams stay. I think it depends on how close the game is. I think LSU's a playoff team regardless. I just think their offense is way too good. Now, the thing is, LSU's defense has not been the stereotypical LSU defense that you usually get. They're more offensive-heavy this year. And just with Joe Burrow, Chase on the outside, Edwards-Helaire at running back, there's so much firepower on this offense. I think that if they lose to Georgia and it's a close game, I think they fall to 4. Now, what do I want to see happen? I want to see the playoff stay exactly as it is now. Now, that's not going to happen. So, what I'm hoping for is, I don't know how the playoff committee is going to do it, but the best-case scenario, I think, for college football is an Ohio State-LSU championship game. That's just what everyone would watch.
Yes.
Who would not watch that? Like, seriously, there's lots of games that have been unwatchable. That's a game you watch. I think what you need to do is you need to have Ohio State play Georgia in the first game and LSU play Clemson. Or let's say LSU loses to Georgia. Let's say you drop – what do you do with Clemson? Let's say Clemson's game is close against Virginia. Do you drop Clemson from 3 to 4? Do you put LSU at 3 and you put Georgia up to 2? It's another possibility. It's just the committee would – I think the committee would want to shape it as we know that LSU's good. We know Ohio State's good. We know they're the best two teams. We want to find a way to get them those two to play in the championship game, just like how they worked. They always made it work out for Alabama and Clemson.
Yeah, I'd agree. Those are the two teams you want playing in the championship. But, you know, there could be a lot of mix and matching depending on what happens at that SEC championship game. Now, if Clemson loses somehow, they're out. And the next team in would be Utah if they would win. So a lot of people think Utah would be in over Oklahoma. And I don't know. That's tough to look at because Oklahoma plays number 7, Baylor. So if they win and you have – if Utah and Oklahoma win and Georgia loses, who goes in?
I still think Utah goes in. I think that
– A lot of people do think Utah. So.
I know. I don't know why. Like, I don't see it with Utah. I know their defense is really good. No one watches them. I really don't watch them. I watch one game.
It's a Pac-12 team that's not USC. So, like, who's watching them?
I will watch the game against Oregon. That'll be very telling as to seeing how good this defense really is against an NFL-style quarterback
and
top
know,
prospect in Herbert.
And Utah doesn't have – I mean, what wins do they really have? I mean, against Washington –
Chris Peterson's out
Washington
there.
Washington State. I mean, they don't. They beat number 17 Arizona State, who is, you know, they beat them pretty handily. And their loss came to USC, and they didn't win their division. So,
They beat out USC at the end because USC had 2 losses.
I mean, there wasn't really a lot of competition for Utah, but Oklahoma being in the Big 12, a little bit more competition because you have Texas, you have other teams in there like Baylor. They beat Baylor handily. They beat they came back against Baylor.
Yeah, they had to come back.
Beating Oklahoma State. So they beat a lot of ranked teams. Like, yeah. It's just a question, why wouldn't they be in there? And they lost to Kansas State, who ended up being ranked here and there throughout the year. Same with USC. USC was ranked a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, but Oklahoma State's not really good. I mean, come on. Texas is the most underachieving program in college football.
But they're still ranked wins. At the time, they were ranked wins. It's strength of schedule.
Texas also has, 4 losses? Texas every year, no matter who the coach is, no matter who the quarterback is, this has not been the team that everybody projects them to be and thinks that they should be. It's an underwhelming franchise. It's an underwhelming program.
I just think, you know, I heard that one of, you know, the characteristics of, I think we talked about it before, characteristics of getting into the college football playoff is also star power. I mean, who wouldn't want to see Jalen Hurts in there, you know, getting another chance?
That's the thing.
There.
Like, no one knows anything about Utah.
Exactly.
Like, I can't name you one player on their team. Okay, like, just off the top of my head.
If you started going around and asking people, like, hey, do you know anybody on the Utah Utes? How many people do you genuinely think would answer?
No. There's always that
maybe
one.
John Hanna.
There's always that one team that's
like
just.
John. There's maybe
always,
Goldberg.
There's always that one team though that sticks around in the, you know, the college football playoff discussion, and like it has that you don't expect, and
like
it's
the
like,
UCF
that
and
sneaks
it's Utah.
In as a 4,
and
you
it's
know?
And it's Utah this year. So we're just gonna have to see how this plays out. It's gonna be a very exciting weekend. If Utah and Oklahoma win and, you know, Georgia loses or Georgia wins, there's going to be a lot of mix-ups, you know, in the top six. Not, you know, anywhere beyond that, but, you know, it'll be exciting to watch. So
maybe Pitt sneaks into the top 45.
Where even are, like, do we know, like, our actual rankings?
No.
Like,
they're probably sub 50.
Unranked.
So. Yeah.
Unranked.
All right, want to go to college basketball. Do you want to move on to college basketball, Nate?
Yeah.
You ready for that? Let's do it. Are you taking us away with college basketball, Nate? You're the college expert.
Am I taking us away with college basketball? Okay.
I mean, I can if you want to. I mean, I was at the game.
Oh, that's a big Rutgers win. So Pitt,
big Rutgers.
Pitt 7-2, you know, coming off a couple Power 5 wins. So, I mean, good wins non-conference-wise for the Panthers. They played in the Fort Myers tip-off, what was that, 2 weekends ago. They beat Kansas State in the first game, you know, a tough game for them. Not a pretty game, honestly, for the Panthers. They managed to, you know, sneak a win by, you know, Xavier Johnson, I think, a late bucket to, you know, push them over the top and give them a win. And then they sort of handled Northwestern easily in the second half and, you know, the championship game of this Fort Myers tip-off tournament. And then they come back home, and the Blackouts, representing the city of Pittsburgh in their black unis, winning 71-60 over Rutgers.
The uncommon courage in the uncommon courage shirts that they gave out at the game. I was at the game, and I got a shirt. Pretty decent game all around for Pitt. There were some turnovers at times, but that's just what a young team has to go through. Ryan Murphy had 15. McGowan's had 16. Markel Fultz had 20. I mean, Xavier Johnson had 20. Yeah, so watching Xavier Johnson play, I realized he is Markel Fultz.
Did you see that nice little ankle breaker, though?
He did. I mean, just like Markel Fultz, he could drive. He can go to the basket, but he can't really shoot. And Xavier Johnson had a good game where he did shoot pretty well, 8 of 14, 2 of 3 from the free throw line, 2 of 5 from 3. He put up 20 points. Guess who also scored 20 points the same night? Markel Fultz.
Have you ever seen Markel Fultz and Xavier Johnson in the same room? Yes or no? I can't say I have.
I don't know. Audie Stoney had 10 points off the bench. Eric Hamilton had 6. Justin Champagny, the leading scorer for Pitt, had 0. He was 0 of 6 from the floor. Just a bad game for the freshman all around. Really just was shy to shoot the ball. He would not drive. Every time he got the ball, he was looking to pass. He was not looking to score.
That's what's going to happen, though, with, you know, those young players, especially that aren't, you know, 4 or 5-star players, you know, top recruits. They're going to have their, you know, their inconsistent games and, you know, their first-year jitters if you're not someone like Xavier Johnson or McGowan's. But for this Pitt team, they continue to rely on that 7-man rotation coming off the bench, especially without Gerald Drumgoole and Kenny Chukwuka is still injured.
Chukwuka.
So when they get those two back, I'm pretty sure they're, you know, a couple weeks, you know, closer. They're going to be close to returning. Hopefully by the time, you know, ACC play comes into full swing, that they'll be back and finally be able to rely on, you know, a full bench for them. But, I mean, let's look at that matchup that's coming up tonight.
Oh, brother.
Take on number one Louisville.
Louisville on the road.
Louisville.
Pitt is not looking very great in this one. Louisville favored by 12.5. Louisville, as you said, 8-0 overall. They are a very, very solid team. Does Pitt have a chance? This game on the ACC Network at 9:00 tonight.
I can't see it.
I think Pitt's going to keep it close in the first half, and then just typically how it happens, you know, Louisville will come out second half and just sort of rule over them. Pitt, I think, can, you know, they're physical. I think they can draw fouls. I think they can get to the free throw line. But it depends how they do there, and it depends how they do beyond the three-point arc. Because they have been very bad at points this year beyond the three-point range. If Ryan Murphy decides to take 10 shots and misses all of them, you know, good luck if you have any chance of winning. So it all depends, you know, how consistent they are from, you know, shooting the ball. I know they're not going to have great looks because Louisville's going to be all over them. So we'll see how this one turns out. I mean, going to be a tough matchup. You know, it's going to be a good matchup for Pitt, though, just because they're facing a very good opponent, number one ranked in the nation. It's going to be a good early test. It's an ACC, you know, matchup. They already have their first ACC win against a, you know, Florida State team that Pitt wasn't really expected to win that game. So we'll see if they can at least stay competitive in this game, stay competitive in the ACC throughout the year.
Louisville coming off of a big win at home over number 4 Michigan, 58-43. Yeah, by the way, Michigan, I know they beat a bunch of ranked opponents, but to go from like 33-4, I mean, that's a little high, okay? That's a little high to rank Michigan. Not really that close of a game. Teske scored 18 and 10, double-double for Michigan. Jordan Nora, one player to look out for in this Pitt and Louisville matchup, 22 points, 12 rebounds for the Cardinals.
I believe they picked him to be the ACC player of the year before the year. So he's going to be one tough matchup.
I mean, right now he's averaging 22 and 8. 21.9 points and 7.5 boards. I mean, that's a solid stat line so far, if you ask me.
Tough matchup for, you know, Terrell Brown and the boys down low. So
Terrell Pryor would have locked him up. Don't you worry, Nate.
Get better, Terrell Pryor.
Yeah, get better.
I said Terrell Brown. But
I know, but you were getting ready to say Terrell Pryor. I heard it.
No, I didn't. No, that was not in my head, but okay.
I heard Terrell Pryor.
All right, if we want to stay in the city, let's look at, you know, across the town at Duquesne Dukes. They started 7-0.
Who?
One of the best starts, you know, in their program history. They beat VMI 71-58 the other evening. There's been a lot of talk on Twitter about who's having the best start, and Duquesne fans think they have had the better start, but I don't buy it. I mean, they're in the A-10, okay, basketball conference, but it's Duquesne. And they're saying, oh, look how convenient it was that Pitt didn't want to play them the year they're actually good. But I think Pitt would have still beat them.
That's because they wanted to play RMU.
RMU was way better. RMU was way better.
0-31 overall against Pitt.
And speaking of RMU, 2-8 on this young season.
Oh, no.
Continue to struggle.
Okay, so let me point this out. So me and Logan Carney have the basketball podcast, and it is interesting to say the least. But he was giving me crap because I said, Andy Toole, we got to start talking about him here, okay? This was when the team was, I think, 2-5. We had the podcast, and we were like, oh, they'll beat Cleveland State.
Probably like 1-5 because they only got their second win just a few days ago.
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
Geneva.
We were like, yeah, they'll beat Cleveland State right now. They'll get another win thrown in there right now. I mean.
They have no one big. To be honest, they should be 4-4. They should have beaten Cleveland State and UIC, but, you know, they can't win those games.
I mean, I get it. These are non-conference games. You schedule a bunch of them. They're other teams' cupcake games. But you can't start the season 2-8, okay? I don't care how bad the conference is. I get it that it's supposed to be, you know, very weak. And it should be, you know, very attainable for RMU to win the NEC. But this is a terrible start to the season. And I get it. Everybody loves Andy Toole. The boosters love him. Everybody loves him. He's a great dude. I don't know.
If you want to be a competitive program, then yeah.
I don't know if the talent's there, but they've gotten some transfers in, and this is just a team that, I mean, maybe early on just isn't meshing, but they got to turn it on eventually. And if that's against the, you know, crappy conference opponents, then
there's a lot of basketball left. So
there is a lot of basketball left. Not even NEC play beginning yet, but that's where we stand right now. All right, let's move on to irrelevant fact of the day. It's kind of stupid, but we're going to say it anyway. So you know that for the winter, birds fly south, right?
God.
Right? So, you know, also ducks, they fly south for the winter. At least some of them do. This duck is going to fly the Steelers south to the winter. Super Bowl is in Miami. You do realize that, right? Could Duck Hodges fly the Steelers south for the winter? That is the irrelevant fact of the day. Ducks fly south for the winter to the Super Bowl.
Okay, I was going to say.
Actually, I'm going to take over. I have a better fact. Fun fact, Josh Gordon this season is 9-0, and Kenyon Drake is 0-10. Kenyon Drake hasn't won a game this year.
I did see that, but
I did see
no
that.
One cares about that.
That's a fun gonna fact. I was going to say, that wasn't even a fact, just because
it is a fact.
Ducks flying south for the winter is a fun fact.
That's a better fact.
That's why I said no one would like that one, but I had to throw it in there.
I had to throw a fact.
Because it's Duck Hodges. All right, let's go and move on to the I'm sorry segment. Who would like to start?
Goldie.
Oh, you just
take it away.
I would like to say the Pens fans saying sorry for the entire month of November. The Pens went 6-8 during the month of November, which is completely subpar. Judging by, I think they went 8-5. They went 8-5 in November. I mean, the team just took a step back. I mean, they couldn't win a bunch of games. We went to OT a bunch of times. We just couldn't get the job done.
It should be more like an I'm sorry for our organization that, like Austin has mentioned, doesn't play well in the month of November. So
Have we? I mean, I haven't looked in. I haven't looked in previous November.
They struggle, you know, in November. Yeah, it just is what it is. For some reason, I don't know. It's just how they are.
It just depends on November. Just never.
Remember, hockey doesn't officially start until January or after the Steelers play. So after the Steelers season's
no,
over.
No, hockey's still going on, but
it's going on, but it doesn't actually. Opinion.
All right, so my I'm sorry for the day is, of course, Pitt underperforming, I believe, once again. I think they underperformed for a year that easily could have been 9 or even double-digit wins, you know, the way they started, you know, losing to subpar teams in Miami and getting blown out by Virginia Tech and also Boston College. And Narduzzi continues not to be able to mount up wins throughout the year. I mean, you look at his tenure, he could have easily had a few 9-win seasons, you know, a few years back. He could have had a 9-win season this year, but continues to, you know, lose fans, to be honest. This Pitt football team continues to lose fans of mediocrity because they can't win games. You know, Wonder Heinz Field looks like, you know, a yellow tundra, like, out there. Like, come on now. So I'm sorry, you know, Pitt fans. Pitt football cannot win.
Come on, Pitt. My I'm sorry comes from James Caan, IR. He is always hurt. He can never get on the field. The Steelers now are seeing that Benny Snell can actually play some football. Kareth White gets an opportunity, and he could be a critical return guy the Steelers could use. James Caan, IR, and how about Juju Smith-Schuster? We're going to have to come up with a name for him.
Juju Smith-Wooster.
Shout out Gerchak.
Mark Madden likes to call him Juju Smith Moncrief because he dropped the ball a couple times.
He also likes to say this is what it's all about. But yeah, we'll have to figure out something for Juju. But James Caan, IR, you're still hurt.
And you're still on IR.
And you're might go on IR. So I'm James Caan saying I'm sorry to the fans because I cannot be dependent on as a running back, and the Steelers need to draft a running back in the second or third round. Now let's go on to some happier of times. The Pirates, right? They're happy right now. They just hired a new manager. His name is Derek Shelton. Derek Shelton, the new manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, the 41st manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Opinions, thoughts on the manager? I kind of like it. I think he's going to be a good guy for this organization. He said we're going to have fun, but it's going to be loose, which is definitely what the Pirates have not had last year. There was no fun. It was not loose. People were fighting with each other. And
we had a rapist.
Yes, that is true. And Kyle Crick was throwing, you know, punches at him, at Felipe Vasquez. Get out of here, Felipe Vasquez. We don't want you on this team anymore. And Keone Kella with his fights with bullpen coaches and with all the other things that we did not even hear about, which there has to be a just numerous amount. Thoughts, opinions on the Pirates' new manager. Where do the Pirates go from here?
You know, if Derek Shelton, you know, can keep the locker room loose on a rebuilding year for sure this season coming up, you know, maybe they can, you know, stay loose, win some ball games, and be a sneaky good team. I mean, they have some talented pieces. We'll see how it all shakes up, you know, who they go out and get. But I think it's a good hire. I think, you know, we talked about in the breakdown show that, you know, He's inventive. He's, you know, always working, you know, with at least hitting-wise. We've seen him. He has the speed hitter out there.
The speed
I'm
hitter.
I'm not sure if that's even still a product being sold,
if
though.
It is, then we had to buy about 35 of them and give them to Eric Gonzalez.
So, I mean, he's going to help, hopefully, you know, improve this hitting squad that, you know, had a very good season last year, surprisingly. So, I think it's a good hire. I think, you know, maybe he can – you know, bring this team together, have some good chemistry within the organization. So we'll see how it goes.
Could you imagine if we go to, like, Pirates batting practice and all of a sudden you just see, like, Josh Bell using the speed hitter?
All of them, speed hitters.
Everybody's using the speed hitter.
Derek Shelton has people doing push-ups because they're not using the speed hitter.
Yeah, that's your punishment.
I mean, but, yeah, I mean, after last season, I mean, with all these new hires and stuff, I feel like you can only go up from here, right? I mean,
yeah. The expectations aren't going to be very high for this
team. Yeah, this team, they're going to have very – I mean, how many games do you think, like, people are going to expect them to win?
I'd say 70 is a fine line, maybe 75.
Okay, why not try and break, like, maybe try and get 85, yeah. Maybe 80 wins?
Because that's stupid to be in a middle ground. Either rebuild or go for it. That's what you got to do. Pirates this year are going to go from have you ever seen the rain in terms of terrible play this season to have you ever seen the pitching coach? How about you pitchers with your new pitching coach? let's get some camaraderie with your new guy. We don't know who it is yet, but whoever it is, please build these pitchers back up like the hitting coach did with the hitters this year with Rick Eckstein.
Please make Mitch Keller good.
Please make Mitch Keller good.
Don't ruin his career because Ray Sears couldn't you know, and get
then,
him to be.
And then let him go to, like, what small market team do we want to pick?
Oakland A's.
Kansas State Royals. They're kind of small market.
Let's say White Sox. Let's say Mitch Keller just somehow gets traded to the White Sox.
They're up and coming a little
bit. Because
they're
going to be good.
Because they're going to be really good, yes.
Not necessarily small market, but White Sox.
But White Sox.
Yeah. White Sox.
Chicago White Sox, Chicago Cubs. Which team do you know more? Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, the White Sox are the low-end Chicago team. So,
right. But yeah, Derek Shelton is in. He's got a lot. To come up with to figure out what they're going to do with the roster of this team. His first day in Pittsburgh, he went to Permane's with Joe Musgrove. That was cool. And then the next day, he went to a Pirate game with Joe Musgrove and Josh Bell.
They went to a Pirate game.
Wait a minute. How could Joe Musgrove go to a Pirate game?
They're going to be going to the Pirate game 162 games a year and hopefully more.
Wait a minute.
All right, let me rephrase.
What is this?
I did write Pirate game on my notes, but Derek Shelton went to the Penguin game. There we go. With Joe Musgrove and Josh Bell. And then they ran into some friends. Jason Momoa was there. He's the Aquaman.
Okay, we were trying to figure out, is Jason Momoa from Pittsburgh? Like, why?
Don't ask me.
Look it up while I continue talking.
I don't know movies.
Devin Bush was there. The long snapper Cam Cannaday was there. And quack, Duck Hodges was there. So that was great.
He is from Hawaii, I believe. That's what it says.
Well, maybe he was at the Penguin game again. So maybe he's just a big Penguins fan. Because how can you not love the city of Pittsburgh?
More Hollywood people. Penguin fans.
Yep. So Elias Diaz was non-tendered. So
the Penguins are relevant.
So the Pirates need a catcher. We'll get to the Penguins in about, let's say, a minute. John Heyman tweeted earlier today at about 7:50 in the morning, Starling Marte is available to be traded, but there's no evidence trade talk has gained much traction yet. Word is the Pirates covet a top catching prospect in trades.
Yeah, that's what they need to aim for, but the Mets went out and got Jake Marisnyk, so does that take the Mets out of contention for getting Marte?
I say no. I don't think Jake Marisnyk is all that good. I think his offense is limited. I don't think he's Juan Lagares. I think he's a little better offensively than Juan Lagares, but he's really good defensively. I think they need that in that outfield. Do they trade Brandon Nimmo for Starling Marte? Would they do that straight up? I wouldn't do that straight up. We pointed this out on the baseball show on Monday. What if you trade the Yankees for Miguel Andujar and then find a way to get Williams Contreras from Atlanta in like a three-team trade? That would be the best of both worlds. Everybody would go to Pirate Fest and be celebrating with Ben Cherington. We'd be jumping around in a circle like Charlie Brown Christmas. That would be a phenomenal trade.
What, you're like 10-person circle or something like that?
Yeah, yes.
Just sitting around a boat with the tree. We're like, look, it's beautiful.
Oh, I also
beating up Pirates team.
Place is gonna look like Heinz Field for pick games. Place is gonna be empty this year.
I also saw that Pirate Fest is the Friday Saturday before the Super Bowl weekend, which is very stupid because the Steelers are gonna be going to the Super Bowl and I'm gonna be in Miami watching Duck Hodges throw the ball down the field. But so that's gonna be kind of stupid that I won't be able to go to Pirate Fest. But that is how it is.
I cannot believe you just jinxed them. You just jinxed them. You just jinxed them. Watch us lose now.
Remember how I said Duck flies out for the winter? Duck flies out to Miami.
But his name's Devlin, not Duck.
Devlin Hodges. Duck Hodges flies out for the winter. I take the announcer jinx off, or whatever you want to call it, because we are college kids here and no one listening, so that's
fine.
Hey,
we're still journalists at the end of the day, as Moretti says.
That is true, but no. If it's going to happen for the Steelers, I've been saying it for weeks. We'll see how it happens. But let's go to the Penguins. Penguins, you know, 3-0 win over St. Louis on Wednesday Night Hockey.
Good bounce back win.
Very good bounce back win.
We previously had lost them 5-2.
Yep. Evgeny Malkin and the Wilkes-Barre Penguins putting up a nice 3-0 win. Tristan Jarry also played pretty well. The whole world is hurt for the Penguins. There's new guys that are scoring. Anybody want to tell us me about the new guy that scored? Because I can't really pronounce his name.
Stefan Nason. I think we've got him from over by New Jersey. I think we claimed off waivers or signed him to like a league minimum deal. But
I think he's bounced around. Yeah,
he's bounced around. That looks like a Dallas Stars.
Yeah, he's got his picture on the NHL.com.
He's another gritty guy that'll help us. I mean, that'll get a couple scrappy goals for you every once in a while. But I mean,
he's just the type of guy that you have to plug in right now, just with all the injuries. I mean, you see Hornquist is now potentially out long term. You have so many guys resting on IR right now.
And Galchenyuk finally scored his second goal of the season. How far are we into the season? 2 months in?
He was hurt.
2-3 months in, but like still, I mean, two goals in 28 games,
but he missed a few. He missed a
handful. I don't know how many games he's played, but it's still. I mean, two goals.
I think this is
two. Me and Nate, we're talking about this. I mean, a guy. I mean, we've always like Galchenyuk, Brassard, like those guys that just like we're just waiting for them to break out.
Derek Brassard was so bad.
The Penguins always seem to find those third line guys that fit on that third line, but can never score. Those depth guys that you know they go out and get that are supposed to be, you know, highly regarded, like Brassard.
And I think Bukestad, too.
Bukestad has sort of been a little bit like that. I mean, I think Brandon Sutter for a little bit was like that, a third-line guy, good face-off guy, but couldn't really
He'd only score in shorthanded goals.
Yeah, so he got his flashes. I mean, Galchenyuk, you know, maybe he'll catch fire. Brassard had a few flashes, but not many. So they seem to find these guys that, you know, are expected to, you know, put up the goal numbers but haven't been able to, and right now they need it. They need Galchenyuk to score. They need, you know, here in this game versus the Blues, Teddy Bluger scored. And, you know, last game you had the Chris Letang and Sam Lafferty score. So you need scoring from all around the lineup, including defense, including these third and fourth line grinders that they basically are.
So let's play the game that I love to play, the game of who are these guys. First of all, let's look at the lines that the Penguins deployed out there against St. Louis. Jack Johnson was out with an illness. Evgeny Malkin, Jake Gensel, Dominic Simone on the first line. Okay, those guys are, those guys.
Those are good guys.
McCann is your second line center. Alex Galchenyuk. Okay, he scored. And then, I can't pronounce it. No, what?
Stefan
Nason. Okay, he was your another forward on the. He was your right wing on the second line. Teddy Bluger, Dominic Cahoon, and Brandon Tanev. That's usually your fourth line. And then Joseph Brandisi, Zach Aston-Reese, and Sam Lafferty.
Yeah.
Interesting. Letang, Marino, Pedersen, Ruedel, Rikola, Trotman. That's basically your Wilkes-Barre-Scranton defensive lineup.
Trotman, Ruedel, Rikola, and Marino, all guys that are
usually in Wilkes-Barre.
I think after this, I think Marino has solidified his spot.
Marino's playing pretty well.
Yeah, and I don't mind Zach.
You know, my one friend's not a big fan of Trotman, but
I don't mind him. I haven't watched him a ton, but I think he has, you know, decent size. I think he has decent skill. I'm not saying he's an NHL caliber player. I mean, maybe a seventh guy to throw in there. Trotman.
Well, he's not an NHL caliber defenseman right now. He has been reassigned to Wilkes-Barre, and guess who's been activated off IR? Welcome back, Justin Schultz, from the official Penguins Twitter account.
That's a big ad. Big ad to the offensive firepower of the team.
Yeah, from the defensive side.
Marino, do you know Marino? He had a solid rookie defenseman point streak going. It was like at least, I think he made it to at least five or six games, which is probably one of the best in Penn's history. Which is what I saw, because I saw that somewhere.
I mean, Marino's coming in to his own. He's finally maybe another guy that the Pens can rely on. You look at, you know, Dumoulin, who came up, you know, is a young guy. I mean, it's been a while since we've actually had a young guy in the Penguins organization to rely on. I mean, Pouliot didn't pan out to be much. I mean, he's bounced around. Now he's with...
I mean, since
now he's
Dumoulin,
with the Blues.
Yeah.
Well, Pouliot's with the Blues now.
Is he? I thought he was with Vancouver. Did
no,
he go?
He no went, he's with the Blues. He made his Blues debut, I think, the game before the first time they played.
The Pens, I mean, I just saw this. I mean, we're 7-0-2 in the past 9 home games. I mean, it feels like,
they always are so good on home ice. It's always home cooking for them.
Maybe we can win, maybe we can steal a couple games on the road. Maybe we can hope for the best. And we also ended the Blues road point streak, which ended at 10 games. So, I mean, Blues road warriors here.
Pens seem to be breaking some streaks. Talk about the Islanders earlier. But maybe the biggest discussion that we'll touch on for a little bit, the goaltending discussion. Tristan Jarry and Matt Murray, you know, competing right now for starts. I mean, Jarry, the past couple, you know, the month of November, he's had a few starts. He has had a few games played. He's currently second in the NHL in save percentage. Yeah, he doesn't, you know, have the same amount of games played. He has a .936 save percentage, which puts him up there in the league. So it's going to be a battle. He had a great game, obviously, against the Blues, you know, a bounce-back win. You know, he struggled in a couple other games, but, I mean, he came in against Vancouver, you know, played well to help the Pens come back and win that game, won against Calgary and the Devils, and then, you know, played very well, only letting in one goal versus Toronto, who, you know, we know has offensive firepower. So Jarry finally, you know, stepping up, you know, as a guy that the Penguins, you know, was a highly regarded prospect. He has been for years. He's been just hanging out in the minors because of Fleury and Murray and then, you know, the other backups they've had. So they haven't really, you know, looked at him too much, but now he's getting some playing time. And also another thing about that, he could potentially be a trade piece if they want to move him, because, you know, goalies, you know, are honestly hard to come by, even especially backups. So if he becomes, you know, pretty good, pretty talented, they could have, you know, a piece to move in Jari, or if they really want to look and trade Murray. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, interesting here in the next few months how the Penguins pan out, because, you know, we talk about November is always a rough month for them. But Jari and Murray, you know, another goaltending, you know, duo right now that's, you know, looking for time.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't really tend to see through. I mean, because it could just be just a hot goaltender streak. I mean, we've seen goalies do that, I mean, countless times throughout the years. I mean, where they just get really, really hot, and then, like, you think, like we Mikko Koskinen, the Oilers goalie, he was on fire for at least a solid 10 games, and then he just burnt out. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen to Jari, but, like,
yeah, but this is where the competition's good, and then you can rely on either goalie you throw in there. So.
Yeah, you can rely on either goalie.
So the Penguins do, though, come up, and they play the Coyotes. The Coyotes are doing pretty well so far, 17-9-4. Phil Kessel, former Penguins,
returns.
17 points so far this year. Had a two-goal game versus the Flyers just a day ago. He has 6 goals, 11 assists on the year, so that would be a fun matchup to watch.
Team a lot of people sleep on that, but again, that has shown great promise and maybe some life down there in Arizona.
We'll see how that game turns out for the Penguins. Big game. Phil Kessel returns. Should be a nice atmosphere and a welcoming atmosphere for the two-time Stanley Cup champion. Now let's go to the predictions as we close out the show. Let's start first with the Steelers in Arizona. Who wins and why?
I'll take this one first. I say Steelers win. I think they finally really... Not finally, but they really get that offense going. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, I think they break that 30-point plateau. I think they win 31-21 because I think, you know, no, actually, I'm going to say 31-17. I do think Kyler Murray has a decent day, but then later in the game, he turns the ball over quite a bit, and, you know, the Steelers run away with it.
I think this is going to be an ugly game because, like, as we've all mentioned, Steelers on the West Coast, it's just not – It's not very good. It's going to be very ugly, but I still think Pitt's going to get out. I still think the Steelers are going to get out with the win by a score of, I think it's going to be 28-21.
Okay, I am saying almost the same score. I think Steelers win it. I got 28-24. I think it's going to be a close game. I think Kyler Murray in that offense in the second half especially has been really good. I think they're going to put up a majority of their points in the first half because I think Steelers defense second half-wise has been, you know, unstoppable at times. So I think the Steelers defense plays well, gets a key play when they need to against Murray. Steelers win the game and move to 8-5 on the season. Now let's go to the Penguins.
Hey, who says Ducks and Penguins can't get along? Let's go Pens.
Penguins against Arizona.
Oh, boy.
Who do we got winning this game?
Phil Kessel, I think, has a couple points, but I think the Pens win 4-2.
I think, do we know who's starting?
I don't know.
I still think Arizona's going to win by the score of I think it's going to be 3-1, but it's going to be a 2-1 game the whole time, and then Coyote's just going to get an empty netter.
The Battle of Pittsburgh and Arizona goes 2-0 in favor of the city of Pittsburgh. Steelers win, Penguins win, score 3-2. Big goal by Malkin late in the third period. Look for that. Now, college football playoff. What are your projected picks? Who do you think is going to make it? This is what we should do. Does Georgia make it? If not, what's the playoff look like?
Are we saying that if Georgia loses, they're out?
If Georgia loses, they're out. Probably.
I'm going with overall prediction of this weekend and then who's going to be my final four. I think Georgia loses this weekend. I think LSU remains perfect. Goes LSU's number one, Ohio State at two because they win. Clemson wins. They stay at three. Obviously, Georgia bounces out. I think Oklahoma has a dominant showing against number seven, Baylor. I think they sneak into number four.
I mean, Nate basically took the word. That's basically what I was going to say. I mean, Georgia's going to get knocked out. LSU remains perfect. They will overtake Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State will be playing Wisconsin. They don't stand a chance. They didn't stand a chance before. Clemson's going to sweep on through. And then Oklahoma, based on purely star power and a solid performance against Baylor, will make it into the four spot.
If, and only if, Georgia loses, I don't see Oklahoma making it. I just think that, you know, we've seen Oklahoma in the playoffs. This is the, out of the other two teams that made the playoffs for Oklahoma, this is the third worst team. This is the third team in terms of ranking wise. I think if anybody sneaks in, it's Utah. Do I want to see Utah sneak in? No.
Do y'all want to see Jalen Hurts play? Yeah.
I hope that Georgia wins and LSU stays in, but what do I think happened? I think LSU wins. I think they go to one. I think they're probably two. I think the committee loves Ohio State. And I think it's right.
But you can't go against LSU's
record. Now, the thing
record.
Is, though, if Georgia wins, do they go LSU 2 and Georgia 3 and then Clemson 4? Because Clemson's your, honestly, your worst team right now.
They would put LSU 3 and Clemson, and Georgia would go to 2.
So it's going
to
just be a rematch of the SEC champ game?
Possible. Well, if LSU, if Georgia wins, LSU would probably be 3, Ohio State would be 1, Georgia would be 2, and Clemson would be 4. So that means you get Clemson, Ohio State. That means you get Clemson, Ohio State,
you still
LSU.
Get that chance of LSU and Ohio State.
Yeah, you still do.
They should, as you said before, Austin, they should probably go for that at all costs.
But they would not want to do an LSU-Georgia playoff because we just saw it. Exactly. In the NCAA championship game. So there's a lot to be determined. All right, let's go to shout-outs as we close out the show.
All right, I'm going to shout out my mom, and brother. I mean, Alex, my brother, he just texted me. He wanted me to know if I could pick him up from school today. Huh. I have class,
no,
you idiot.
No, I can't.
I hate him, but I love him at the same time. If Graham, you're listening, love you. I'll come work at the shed anytime you need me to. Got to go clean it out. But, grateful for all my friends and family and a wonderful semester.
The shed?
She had a shed I had to clean out. I'm driving over Thanksgiving break. There were dead animals.
Thanks. Right, thanks for letting us know that.
Shout out to my mom, my grandma. I believe they're both listening. My dad, my sisters, of course. Shout out to the friends back home. Shout out to Josh.
We love
him out there.
Goldberg.
Jad.
So those are that's my shout outs.
Oh, you're done already? Oh, that was pretty cool.
All right. I'm going to shout out my mom, my dad, my sisters, the rest of my family back home.
Muffin,
obviously. My dog, my wonderful dog. Shout out the Pittsburgh Steelers and Duck Hodges.
Ducks fly south.
Ducks fly south for the winner. Let's do it.
Can you make that your Twitter bio bio?
Can we make t-shirts, please? We should do that.
Can we fly south for
if they make the playoffs, we are making t-shirts.
Ducks fly south to Miami for February.
No, we just say Ducks fly south, then it's Ducks flying to the Super Bowl. That's all we do.
Let's do that. Those are my shout outs. Thanks my friends for being my friends, even though they annoy me sometimes. At least they did a Friendsgiving. But it's going to be a great Christmas season.
So this is Christmas.
So if this is the last show before the break, what have you done?
Why not? It's December. You might as well just play Christmas music, so it doesn't matter if it's the last show or not.
That whispering was terrifying.
That is how the song starts.
I never listened to that. I didn't know
it was Christmas. Happy Christmas. And so this is Christmas.
We take you to Christmas break with the best Christmas song, in my opinion, of John Lennon. This is the great Christmas. Happy
Duck,
Christmas song.
We'll take us to the Super Bowl.
Duck, can you take us? The next time we'll be on, it'll be playoff season. Let's go, Duck Hodges. Take us all the way down south to Miami in February. This is Baldwin and the Burgers, show number 12. Thank you for listening all semester. We'll see you next semester. Hopefully, everything in the world of sports and the world of just life in general will be on a smooth path and be great for everyone in between. I am Austin Bechtel.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golbach.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next semester.
Merry Christmas, Goldberg.